You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to the Break a Bat podcast, where baseball meets Broadway. An attempt to show that my two favorite mediums don't have to live in such separate worlds and maybe even break some stigmas. We're happy to have you with us. Now let's play ball.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Break a Bat, where baseball meets Broadway. This is Al Malafronte coming at you for the Broadway Podcast Network. As big of a sports fan as I am, I can safely say there's very few television series with a sports backdrop that really keeps me engaged. There's been some decent ones over the years, but usually it's the documentaries or the actual feature films that I consider favorites in that genre. That all changed this spring when we were fortunate enough to get a new series on Disney Plus called Big Shot, which you may remember our friend of the show, Jesselyn Gilsig, talked about last year right here on Break a Bat. The gist of it is John Stamos playing a temperamental college basketball coach rehabbing his image at an all-girls private high school and teaching them all sorts of winning and life lessons along the way while actually learning a few things about himself as well. Tonight, we're lucky enough to welcome a cast member from the show who really caught my attention, and she's certainly no stranger to the performing world. In addition to playing the role of the ever ambitious and drama loving Harper on Big Shot, our guest tonight got her start in show business when she was all of 3 years old. When she broke in as a child star in The Young and the Restless, she's since appeared in a number of other mega house television programs spanning anything from The Bold and the Beautiful to How I Met Your Mother to Desperate Housewives. And going back to the mid-2000s, she earned 3 Young Artist Awards in the process for her work on The Young and the Restless. In recent years, she's also done quite a bit of voiceover work for Disney's Sophia the First and Spirit Riding Free on Netflix. And in addition to all of her on-screen work, I think she's just such an awesome creative. For the folks at home that have been watching Big Shot, to go along with her acting work, she actually lent her songwriting talents to the show, as you'll hear 5 of her original songs showcased throughout the season. I'm so grateful she could join us tonight. So with that being said, I ask you all to please turn your attention to home plate, just beyond the marquee. Now batting, Darcy Rose Burns. Darcy Rose, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me. What an introduction.
Oh, I'm so glad you enjoyed it. And it looks like you have a pretty legit studio setup over there, which we always like to see.
Yes. I'm in my booth, my whisper room. Her name is Hillary the Booth, after Remember When. But I call her Sexy because she is my TARDIS.
Now, you're in California right now, right?
I am, yeah.
And how are things going out there?
Pretty good. We're in the middle of a heat wave right now. So, normal, I guess.
After all that time, on the set of Big Shot, have you been going outside to shoot hoops or anything like that? Did the sports thing rub off on you at all?
They had to teach me how to catch a ball on Desperate Housewives. I am probably the most traditionally sports uninclined person you will ever meet. I am a sports person in dance and swimming and stuff, but as far as like games like basketball and baseball and all those, it's, yeah, keep me away from flying things. It's probably the best.
Now, what was your initial reaction when you heard about Big Shot, having the sports backdrop? Yeah. Did it surprise you in any way that, you were being called in to audition?
No, because of the introduction of the character. She was introduced as the nosy journalist. So that seemed to fit for me. If I had been called in for the basketball, I would have been like, this is not going to happen. Nice to meet you. Have a wonderful day. but, you know, bringing me in as the person, you know, trying to find the truth, seemed to fit. And they thought so as well.
Yeah, a little different from some of the other show's main characters. And, you know, you're also the show's resident theater kid, you know? So that, and that lines up pretty well with your love of Broadway, right?
It does. Yeah. Yeah, I almost did Broadway. I was up for Broadway before Desperate Housewives, actually. I was up for Mary Poppins. It took me backstage and had me see the show and everything. Showed me the line on the wall that you couldn't, you know, grow out of, or else they would fire you on spot. So we went with Desperate instead.
Was that for Jane Banks?
Yeah. 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 When they're the kid, they have the height requirement for the kids. And no matter where you are on the contract, if you outgrow that height, you're gone. So it seemed like a safer bet to go with Mary Poppins. Now, in hindsight, I'm extremely short, but we didn't know that at the time because it was right before the age where the women in my family have either a growth spurt or stay, you know, short for the rest of their lives. And we didn't want to take the risk. So desperate.
That's an ugly side of show business. Height discrimination. I'm not a big fan of that.
Well, it worked out fine for me, so I'm okay.
Yeah. Oh, but, absolutely. Yeah. How much fun was it for you to shoot Big Shot? Obviously, all the episodes are now on Disney Plus, and I was one of the folks that, you know, was tuning in week after week before you could binge them all. So, like, how much fun was that for you?
It was so much fun. You know, Harper as an actor, just, you know, baseline is such a fun character to get to dive into. She's, you know, on the surface, very funny and very mean-ish. But, you know, there's a lot going on under the surface that you kind of see as the season goes on. So that's just, as an actor right there, that's just like a dream role. You really get to have fun, but dive into something really deep as well. You know, but then, and then you add in the songwriting and the performing, and we shot 109, the songs that are in 109, we shot them like a play. We did a rehearsal, we staged the whole thing. The lighting was in the room. It wasn't, you know, post. So we got to kind of literally do it in front of the entire cast and crew of Big Shot. So, you know, when you add all those things together, it was just a whirlwind of fun.
Now, one of the big story arcs in the show for Harper is when she takes on the role of Beth Macbeth, and I love that. You know how that was the school's musical?
Yeah.
Like, one of the funniest premises of a musical that I've ever seen. I just thought the way it was executed was absolutely brilliant, and you had a lot to do with bringing it to life, you know, as far as composing the music goes. How'd you get the inspiration to write for that?
You know, I have this weird circular relationship with the Scottish play. The December prior to being cast on Big Shot, I found out that I was going to be playing Harper on Valentine's Day, which was actually like 2 months after my co-star Tisha Custodio found out I was going to be playing Harper, which is funny in itself. But in December, I had actually written a comedic gender-bent adaptation of the Scottish play, like on my own, completely separate, called Juliet Hereafter. So then we're shooting, you know, 104, and Dean Laurie says that there's going to be a musical and Harper might be in it. I'm like, oh, okay. And then I, you know, when he calls me and asks me to write the musical and tells me what it is, I think I full on cackled in his ear and I was like, yeah, I already wrote this, so let's do it. And of course, but, you know, Beth Macbeth is completely different from what I wrote, but having that research in my back pocket already, I was kind of already in that world. So it was a lot easier to dive back into it. I didn't have to go and reread and do all my research again. I had just kind of done it the year prior. But as far as the inspiration for the music, the first song I wrote for the show, for Beth Macbeth, not for Big Shot, was the Dagger song, which you see in the rehearsal, the audition scene. And that was a tricky one because they really gave me kind of carte blanche to do whatever I wanted with the music. They told me what the role of the song was, like what it had to accomplish. And so for the Dagger song, it has to be, you know, end of act one, kind of, you know, defying gravity, big number for Harper. And then for Emma, Sophia Mitri-Schloss, it has to be acoustic guitar. And it has to also, the lines have to reference her love for Lucas and stuff. And it had to do both those things. It had to be within the context of the Scottish play, but also, you know, their teenage love story. So I kind of knew that that double entendre thing I had to work with. And I scoured Macbeth for a reference point for like that one line. Because I was looking for they didn't tell me where in the play it had to be. It was just wherever you want to write, we'll write it around you. So I was trying to find something that even people who aren't very familiar with Shakespeare would recognize. And the first thing that came to my brain was the dagger scene. And one of the lines is, "Come, let me hold thee. I have thee not, and yet I see thee still." And at that point, Emma and Lucas were forbidden to see each other. So it was kind of like, there's my key. And I just dove in from there. So that was the inspiration for, I don't know if that's the inspiration, but that was the starting point for that song. And there's another version of that song that you hear in 109 with the witches underneath, which is actually, funnily, the witches that we have recording the witches song, the double double, are not the same witches that you hear in the redo of the dagger song in 109 in the play, because that was me recording the demo for this is what I think the witches should be singing for this part of the song, and this is so they have a reference track for when we hire the actual witches, because at that point the witches weren't in the show at all. I had just written double double on my own because I was bored and sent it in. They added that afterwards. So I recorded the witches, you know, the double double toil and trouble, boom, for the end of the dagger song. And that's what they ended up using in the thing. So there's two different sets of witches in 109, and one of them is all four parts of me, and then one of them is the wonderful actors that we hired. And Fight for the Crown, I don't remember, what was my inspiration for that? I knew I wanted it to be the ending battle. Originally, it was just called The Battle. And it had to be, what I was told was it had to be the battle of the philosophies of, not the battle of the philosophies, the battle was my idea, but the contradictory opinions. Sophia, her character in the play, versus Beth Macbeth and their, you know, differing philosophies as far as life and how that relates to, you know, as we see Marvin. So, and I just knew I wanted a fugue. It's only two people, but I still call it a fugue.
No, that's a great word for it. And I love the way, you know, it intertwined with, you know, Marvin's story arc, you know, when Sophia's looking out at him in the audience there.
Yeah.
That was just so, so cool. I absolutely love that.
Yeah. They really killed it with the lines in between. It was brilliant writing.
Yeah, no, it looks like just such like a fun cast to be a part of. And the creatives obviously were fantastic.
Yes.
To my understanding, the role you auditioned for originally was not Harper. There was like a different character that they kind of wanted you to play it.
You're good. Yes and no. I originally auditioned for the pilot back in, I think, early January or late December. I can't quite remember when the original audition was, but it was for another character, had a different name. It was more strictly just the foil of Marvin, just kind of getting in his way and annoying him, which is still what we see in 103. But that was like the only function of the character. And when I auditioned originally, I remember the character had this catchphrase that she would do all the time. So when I left the room, I did the catchphrase and slammed the door behind me. That was my exit. And I was like, all right, we'll see what happens. Just because it was funny and I thought it was a fun exit. And so then I get a call from my manager and she says, okay, so they wrote the character out of the show, but if they ever bring the character back, they say they'll pin you again. And I kind of paused for a second and I went, I was pinned? And she said, I didn't tell you that. Oh, never mind. Bye. And just hangs up. And but sure enough, that's what happened. They brought me back as Harper, and they told me this is pretty much the same character. This is who you originally auditioned for, and I got it, and here we are. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm happy it worked out the way it did. And like I said, it was nice to have like a different flavor, you know, to the cast like that. It was really fun, especially with, you know, the way her story evolved. You know, starting out as that ambitious journalist. Almost like kind of, you know, it's an all girls high school kind of gossipy, I guess, in a way. But then, you know, I think that the writers really did something pretty cool, you know, as far as, you know, the love story that evolved, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's so great for young kids, you know.
Tisha Custodio,
you know. Yeah, absolutely. So I think that they were able to really do, they made the character likable rather than, you know, just like a power hungry or power driven. overly ambitious high school girl, I guess, right?
Yeah, I think that's you know, a testament to their writing. And that is something that I was aware of, I think, from the beginning. Like when we were shooting 103, Tisha Custodio and I just kind of hit it off like gangbusters. And it was pretty clear right away that there could be something here for the storyline if they chose to go in that direction. And, you know, she proposed to me the second day on film, on set, and in front of Dean Laurie, and she's still miffed that he hasn't got us a wedding gift yet. So, you know, we were just kind of constantly joking and having fun like that. But that was something that I knew could be an issue. You know, that it was, why does Mouse like Harper? You know, because she, especially at that point in 103, she was so seemingly power hungry and, you know, kind of borderline vicious, shark-like. So that was the driving force for me, for the inspiration, since we were talking about that before, for everything to me, was I knew that, you know, Mouse was such a sweet character and Harper was so, at that point, not, like, there would be maybe question marks in the fans' minds of, like, but why couldn't she find someone better? Why couldn't she find someone that's more on the same wavelength as her? And so my inspiration and my driving force for everything to me was in Mouse telling Harper what she sees in her, she's also telling the audience what she sees in her. You know, it's all the trivial things, like you write with your left hand, drink with your right hand, hum opera songs I don't recognize or understand. Every Monday at lunch, you get salad instead of french fries. You don't always smile with your eyes. Boom! You know, there's something deeper going on there. So both showing Harper that she sees her like maybe no one else does, like sees what's going on underneath, and also showing the audience what exactly it is in Harper that she could fall for. And that was kind of the driving force of that song. And it was really fun to kind of dig into Harper's psyche through Mouse's eyes.
Yeah, no, absolutely. They really found the character in a great way. And obviously you brought so much to the role. I'm almost Thank excited you. To see, first of all, I'm hoping against hope that there's a season two, because it simply needs to happen. Now that they're in division two, hope I didn't give anything away there to my audience. But, that, you know, now that they, you know, there's such a fun story to follow here. I do have to ask you this, though, because you mentioned that you're not the biggest sports fan. To my understanding, John Stamos isn't the biggest sports fan either. Did you two ever joke about that on set?
Not outwardly joke about that. I think, you know, I'm usually of the mindset of, not that there's anything to talk bad about sports, because sports are awesome, but I don't have much in the way to, you know, impart as far as an opinion. So I'm not usually the person who's going to be like, I don't like that, or I don't know about this. So we didn't really commiserate about anything, but it was very entertaining, you know, just watching the sports dialogue being handled when clearly half of us have no idea what's going on is very entertaining from you know, the inside's perspective.
Yeah. No, I can imagine. That, like I said, it just seems like such a cool culture, you know, with all of you. And, you know, it's such a great ensemble show, and there's different storylines that you can follow.
Yeah.
So I really want to see a season two. I'm sure.
So do I. We all do, yeah.
I'm an eternal optimist. Are you?
I try to be. Yeah, I think so. I see things as they are, but I try to hope for the best as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's a good way to be. Now, I have to ask you this. Yeah, you've put up some really cool content on Instagram, you know, throughout the whole pandemic, and it's cool to see that you've showcased your singing ability and your songwriting. I notice a Wicked poster on your wall?
Oh, goodness. Yes, you did. Yes. I honestly forget that's there sometimes, because it's been there for probably 15 years. I have Glinda and Elphaba Barbies behind me in my, you know, bookshelf as well. And I have the necklaces and the shirts. Yeah, I've seen Wicked probably 11 times. I think Glinda is like my ultimate dream role. So, yes, you did see a Wicked poster signed, actually, as well.
By who? Now, is it signed by your Glinda? Are you one of those fans? Like, that's my Glinda, my Elphaba. Are you that level of diehard fan?
I don't think I'm that level of diehard fan, because I think every single person brings something different to the role. However, I would say that if we're being technical, I've mostly seen Wicked at the Pantages and when it had its run here. So that was Megan Hilty and Eden Espinosa for the most part, which was delightful for me because I worked with Megan Hilty on Sophia the First. She came in as a guest star and she completely killed it. And I saw her at the Hamilton LA premiere at the Pantages. And I went up to her and I said, okay, just want to make it clear. I've worked with you. You are on Sophia the First. I'm Princess Amber. Cool. Now that I got that out of the way, I've seen you 11 times in Wicked. I love you. Can I have a photo with you? So I kind of had to get the that part out of the way before I dive right into the creepy. She's incredible.
That's awesome. I do hope that you eventually dabble in Broadway because I just feel like you bring such energy to your performances.
Oh, thank you.
I feel like you just like have the stamina that you could do the 8 shows a week. Is it something you've ever thought about?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I mean, I started on theater. When I was 3, I did Annie. I was Sandy the first time. And after that, I was Molly the second run. And finally, Annie. I have Annie PTSD. I've done it so many times. I hear the music and I start cackling. If I have to sing Tomorrow one more time, I'm probably just like, you know, have a breakdown. I grew up on theater. My idea of a fun talent show was doing the entire green makeup and doing the entire number of Wizard and I suitcase and all. Like this, I am a theater nerd through and through. When Kristen Chenoweth followed me on Instagram, I cried. I literally cried. And then posted about it and then had to check to see if she'd unfollowed me because I had posted about her following me. I was like, did I ruin it? I think I ruined it. I'm so sorry. When people ask me what, you know, the dream project would be, I often joke that it's the lead in the movie adaptation of the Broadway musical that I wrote and starred in. Like that's about as specific as I can be. That's why I loved, you know, doing 109 because, you know, I'm a musical comedian as well and a musical improviser. I was on the musical improv team Power Play at UCB, the mess hall team, Best of the Fest for Burbank Comedy Festival and stuff. So I constantly, whenever I'm not on set or in the booth, I'm performing on stage. That's kind of my home base. And with the, you know, pandemic, that wasn't an option because you couldn't go anywhere. That's why I did the quarantines that you were mentioning. I wanted to get my Broadway, you know, scratch that Broadway itch in a way that wasn't just doing covers. So I did the parodies. But that was what was amazing about getting to do 109 because we did actually shoot it like a play. And so we got to perform in front of the entire cast and crew. And there was a moment, you know, when we finished the number, but before the sword fight that I was just ready to go into the next part and they started clapping. And I had in the back of my brain, I went, oh, right, hold for applause. Because it had been so long that it kind of, it's like, it wasn't normal anymore. But it was a nice little reprieve from the COVID year, getting to perform on a stage. I made Sophia take a bow. She's like, if we're doing this, we're doing this. Come here. And she killed it. So, you know, yeah.
Now, did you guys had started shooting right before the pandemic and then immediately had to shut down? When did you actually finish production?
Yeah, we took 3 calendar years to finish this show. Started filming in 2019, and then 2020 got shut down in March of 2020. Started back up in, I think, August-ish, got shut down a couple more times, and finished in 2021. So,
wow.
Yeah.
A 3-year project for
the longest season one ever.
Oh my goodness. Wow. I didn't even know that, you know, you had to deal with all those shutdowns that happened.
Yeah.
I'm sure, you know, you have plenty of friends in the business that happened all the time though in 2020, but now it's actually, you kind of look forward, you know, hopefully, right?
Oh, hopefully. Yeah, seriously. Yeah. I feel, you know, guilty that some of it was a benefit that I didn't have to write all that music while I was filming. You know, I did end up doing some writing, in my trailer as well, some rewrites, like the Witches song was supposed to be a cappella originally. I added piano to that and the overture I wrote in my trailer as well the same day. But for the most part, I got to do all of that stuff at basically like prep work before we went back, which was an unintended upside, which feels weird to say that there was any sort of upside. But Disney really, you know, wanted to make sure they had their ducks in a row when we came back so that we could have as little problems as possible when it's so new, problems that we haven't had to face before. And now there's this whole new environment you have to be, you know, on top of and, you know, keep us safe. So it was a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now I know you had done, you mentioned Sophia the First, which I guess is not, you know, part of the Disney Junior collection there, but now with Big Shot, do you feel like you're part of the Disney family? I feel like that's just like the pinnacle for any performer.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I've been working for Disney probably for about 10 years now. You know, Desperate Housewives was ABC as well. So it kind of doesn't feel any different. It just feels like coming home. You know, that's where I've been working for a long time. I did the pilot of Sunny with a Chance when it was still called Sketchpad. That was probably when I was 7 or 8. So it's been quite a while that I've been in the Disney fold.
Yeah, no, seriously. I mean, in Disney Plus is really that has been one of the greatest godsends throughout this whole pandemic for me. Just, I mean, all the great content that they've
done.
Big Shot, obviously, the Hamilton movie. Even going back to revisit Boy Meets World has been fun.
All
that stuff. It's just so, it's so great. And I'm so glad that you're such a big part of the, you know, my latest favorite series. So I'm really excited to see what's to come. You have to let me know, though. Have there been any discussions of a second season?
You know, there's always discussions about stories and stuff. Dean Laurie is one of those writers who's already always thinking ahead no matter what. I know that because I am one of those people too, and may or may not be occasionally pitching him unsolicited storylines that he's actually already thought of. Some of them, not all, but some of them. And then I made my brain hurt because he said, I already thought of that. And I was like, what? You know, but there's no official, you know, if we know anything about if we're going to get picked up or not. I know, I'm sure there is ideas in place for if that were to happen. But as far as if that will happen or not, we don't know yet.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Well, as I said, I'm going to keep my optimism. And, you know, Dorsey Rose, you've accomplished quite a bit in your career, but I'm going to preface you, it gets a little bit tough right now on Break a Bat. I want you to put yourself in the batter's box here.
You
got a bat in your hand. You don't have to catch anything, you do have to swing away and give it your best crack. I'm going to ask you a question. You're going to tell me the first thing that comes to mind. How does that
sound? All right. That sounds perfect.
All right. Let's
go.
Do it.
Ready.
Favorite New York City meal?
Oh, goodness. A chicken marsala with gluten-free pasta from a little tiny Italian restaurant that I can't remember the name because I would always just walk there. And it was down a set of stairs. And then I'd watch the soccer games, the football games on the screen in the corner and just eat with my mom, like dinner for breakfast.
How is the Italian food in California? I've never asked my guest that question before.
You know, I don't know, because whatever I get is always altered, because I'm, you know, I'm that Valley girl who's the gluten-free and the sugar-free and the meat-free and the blah. So I always have the change with it. So I don't know if I could really compare authenticity, because it's already different because of my allergies.
Okay. Fair enough. All right. Greatest baseball game or sporting event you've ever been to?
Ooh, all right. Okay, so this is where the musical nerd comes in. The greatest sporting event I've ever been to was Billy Joel at Dodger Stadium. That's as close as I'm going to get to.
That's a great answer. People ask me my favorite time at Shea Stadium, because I'm a Yankee fan, but where the Mets used to play at Shea Stadium, it's when Billy Joel did the last play at Shea. So I think Billy Joel and baseball, just synonymous. Mm-hmm. That must have been epic.
Pink came in. She wasn't like announced to be part of the show. She came into New York State of Mind with him. Everyone was screaming. It was amazing. The two of them together was incredible. And then one of the backup singers did an aria and blew everybody away. It was a great show. Yeah.
You sure you're not from Long Island, Darcy Rose? Because honestly, you have great taste with the Billy Joel call right there.
My family's from Brooklyn. And Boston. Upstate New York,
Wow. Okay, so you've got all some real New York ties.
Oh yeah.
All right, now you are a California girl. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Sheepshead Bay, baby.
Oh, you know what you're. That's where my dad's family was from. Okay.
No. Okay.
Yeah, we're Italian. You're Irish, though, right?
Yeah. I'm from all over the place because my mom's side too, but on that side predominantly Irish.
Okay.
Yeah, that's Irish citizen actually. Yeah.
Oh, that is
dual
my buddy did that recently. Actually, he got the dual citizenship.
Nice, good for him.
Yeah.
My grandpa spends summers in Ackle Island. That's where that side of the family's from.
You're a California girl at the end of the day, so I have to ask you this: who's America's band, the Beach Boys or the Eagles?
Oh, gosh. I'm working with Stamos, so I'm going to have to say Beach Boys.
That is a great answer. You know? I mean, I was hoping that maybe his love of the Beach Boys rubbed off on you, you know, working with him.
I mean, how can you not love them, though? Like, they're brilliant. Both bands are incredible, you know?
Yeah.
It's just good music. Anything that's good music is good with me. Skill set is just so amazing.
We've got summer underway. What is your go-to ice cream truck treat?
Ooh, ice cream truck has never been really an option for me, but I will say you can never go wrong with vanilla, but I'm always the person that packs everything on top of it. Like I'll get, you know, four, especially if it's dairy free, because I try to stay away from sugar, but if there's a big sign that says dairy free ice cream, I'm like, give me everything. So then I'll be the person with the cup of ice cream with like four different scoops of like matcha and honeycomb and like all the weird flavors and then like toppings up to my nose. Anything mochi. It's extra. It's probably the best flavor. The best flavor of ice cream is extra. That's my answer. Final answer.
Great answer.
Thank you.
All right. Aside from your Irish citizenship, fact about Darcy Rose Burns that would surprise people the most.
Ooh. Okay. Let's see. I can't drive. I don't have my license.
Have you ever tried? Have you like failed your road test a bunch?
No, I never got that far. You know, I got my permit when I was old enough to get my permit. I can't even remember what age that is now. Like the moment I turned that age, I got my permit. And then I passed, I started taking driving lessons, and then I went to RADA, and then I came back and I just never did the test. There was always something that got in the way. I kept scheduling the test to renew the permit or to take the driving test. And then I would be booked to work the same day. And so then I'd have to cancel and then it would, yeah. I wish I had a crystal ball. I would have renewed my permit so I could have been like practicing when there was no one on the streets during this last year. But yeah, I don't drive. I'm driven.
That's such a bougie answer. Yeah. What a bougie answer.
Straight out of Karen from Will and Grace. Hey, I don't yell.
Most embarrassing set moment.
Most embarrassing set moment. I think probably the most embarrassing set moment was I fell. I was, okay, so on Desperate Housewives, my parents were having a fight, a bad fight, and then they turned to see me watching them and crying, and then I run up the stairs, and I'm like, we made the kid upset. Oh, gosh. So, you know, it was on their coverage, so I try to give the other actors everything, even if you're not on camera, because it makes their job easier when they have to do their acting. It's so much easier to not be just looking at someone eating a burrito. It's, you know, give them the same amount you'd do on your close-up is my approach. So, you know, Doug and Flicker are going at it and they're killing it and they're having this knockdown drag out fight. And I'm crying and I run up the stairs, except on one of these times that I do it. And again, I'm off camera, behind the camera entirely. I just hit the rug the wrong way and I slipped and I fell into like borderline splits, like a really good, just boom down. And, you know, all the crew members that were sitting at the table that were, I was now facing, tried to get up to like, oh, are you okay? And I did this like, you know, okay, sports, you know, in sports, you're out or you're safe. That hand motion. I did that thing. I was like, sit down. And I waited and I looked behind me because in my brain, I'm off camera. This is after they're done talking. So they can edit it out. It doesn't matter. Save the take. You know, group on the soap, save the tape. Save the take is the name of the game. So I turn around to look to see if, are we good? And I can see Doug pop down from under the camera to look at me and go, you good? And I was legit angry for a sec because I was like, I was saving the take and they, how dare they care about me? It makes no sense. But I was like, trying so hard to save the take. And I'm like, oh, these people, they're trying to see if I'm okay. How?
I'm glad we can laugh about it because clearly it wasn't like a devastating on the field or on the set injury.
No,
so thank God we can laugh about it.
No, I mean, again, I came from theater and my mom, you know, her tap teacher was taught by Bojangles. So I know the tricks of the trade. I know how to fall safely. So like I was fine. You know, I scared people on Big Shot too, because I had to fall 40 times for the end of 109, you know, take after take, I would do the fall and we were on a platform. So I'd hit the floor and go boom. And they were like, you okay? And I'm like, I'm fine. I'm knee pads, elbow pads. I'm fine. Yeah. So there was literally no harm, no foul. Like I was completely fine. I just really wanted to save the take.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, opposite side of the ball here.
Okay.
Yeah, well, no, that's you know what? You're a very seasoned performer. Obviously, your experience spans many, many years now. Yeah. But it's good to know that, you know, you could put that on your resume, you know, able to fall gracefully and just you're a great physical performer. Like I said, I could see that. I could see that, you know, just watching you. That's why I thought you would suit I think Broadway suits you pretty well, so.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm a competitive ballroom and Latin dancer, so I definitely, you know, I like being physical and I like, and as a comedian too, I really like messing with how you present yourself, you know, which it's fun. I dance actually when Sophia the First ended, I wrote a song called Chasing the Picture, which is of course an ADR term. And that was the last thing we did for Sophia the First was chase the picture for the last sequence. And it was this really long segment, very emotional, if you've seen the finale. And that was the last thing that we did. And then it was like, okay, go home. Goodbye, Amber. And I wrote that song after, you know, this 6.5 year, you know, adventure. And then I recorded it and I danced to it around about the week of my birthday for a Latin competition here in LA. So fun fact.
Yeah. And all right. Only other sports question that you're going to probably have to deal with for the rest of 2021. But I have to know, on the baseball front, Team Derek Jeter or Team Alex Rodriguez?
Yes.
You could pick one of them if you want.
Final answer, yes.
Okay. Wow, that is the first time someone's answered that question that way. That's for sure.
Just trying to keep you on your toes.
Okay. All right. So the answer to Team Jeter or Team A-Rod is yes. Okay. Yes. Well, they did both play on the Yes Network. That was their main venue for performing.
Sure. Yes.
Outside of Yankee Stadium. That's who would broadcast the games here in New York.
Which, so now you know course, something. Which of course I already knew, which was the reason I picked that answer.
I noticed the Yankee jersey next to the Wicked poster. I just mentioned that from the videos.
But. Oh my gosh, you're gonna make my family call me. Oh no. What are you trying to do to me? Get me kicked out of family Zoom? Come on now. My aunt is my mom and my aunt, they're from Boston. So that whole side of the family is predominantly from Boston, Massachusetts, East Coast, and Cambridge specifically for the people who know geography. And I was, you know, growing up with the Red Sox chant. That's that's my relationship with baseball. Okay. And I got a Yankees bear in New York because it reminded me of New York. And I went to freshen up before going out to eat. And my aunt came down to visit. And when I came out of the bathroom, I looked around. I was like, where's the bear? And she's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And she had stuffed it in the couch cushions after pretending to strangle it. So, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Wow. Yes. I'm at a loss for words. So after hearing that, knowing what type of family you come from, yeah. I'm just happy that you didn't, like, respond to Team Jeter or Team A-Rod with, like, I hate them both. Like, you very very easily could have done that, but you didn't.
All right. So. All right. Here's probably the only sports story that I have, and it's not even mine. It's my mom's, but she don't need to know that. I, of course, was in New York in the 80s. So my mom was working at a restaurant, and it was the game. This is how little I know about sports, but it was the game where it was like the last play or whatever you call it. And the ball went through the guy's legs. And
Bill Buckner, game 6 of the 86 World Series, Mets versus Red Sox. Yep.
You're good. That's the one. So everyone in the restaurant cleared out. They were jumping on cars and hanging off of telephone poles and screaming and whooping and all that stuff. So my mom is the only one left in the bar working because everyone else left. So the phone rings, she picks it up, Left Bank Restaurant, and she hears a voice go, "You suck!" She's like, "Nancy?" It was her sister. So this is like pre-cell phones. There was no way she would know that my mom was working the phones because that wasn't her job. She was the only one there. She just called the restaurant to say that you suck because they lost.
Oh my goodness. Your family sounds like a lot of fun. No wonder you turned out to be so funny.
Oh, thank you.
Now here's, we talked about most embarrassing moment before, but yeah. What's your proudest moment of your career? Because you've accomplished a lot, and I'm really curious to hear the answer.
Goodness. The proudest moment of my career. You know, I think there's a lot of little moments. I don't think that the proudest moment is behind me. I think there's, there are those little things that you pat yourself on the back for afterwards and say, good job, you. That was a good job. And then there's those moments that are kind of milestones in your career. And of course, Big Shot is one of those milestones of, being a Disney songwriter and also having not been a paid songwriter before this and Disney kind of taking a shot on me. Ha, took their shot. on me. And giving me that opportunity. And I think proudest moment, there was a lot of little things that I'll say from Big Shot, since that's where I'm in my brain now, of, being in the recording studio with Eve Nelson, who produced the songs, and having her just kind of going to let the dog out and saying, this is the button and let me know when you have the take, and kind of her trusting me and guiding me and really, when someone who's so good at their job puts the effort in to mentor you and teach you, it feels really good. This is something that is incredible. So, like you said before, I was on The Young and the Restless, and Bill Bell, who created The Young and the Restless, by the time I was coming in, he wasn't as around. He was still there, but, he had Alzheimer's. So he would come to visit and stuff. And apparently I crawled up on his lap at one point, but it was towards, that portion of his life. So I was doing, I think it was Annie. I can't remember which show it was at this point because I did a lot of them back to back. I was probably 5 or 6 at the time. And this mother of one of the other kids brought her mom to see the granddaughter perform. Her mom had Alzheimer's. She had no facial recognition. She didn't really recognize her granddaughter, even really her daughter, I don't think. But it's like, grandma can come see her perform. It'll be fun no matter what. So she was in a home. And I come on stage to do whatever portion of the show it was I was in. I can't remember the show. And she says out loud to her daughter, "That's Abby. That's Abby. She told Victor Newman that he's her father." They had put Young and the Restless on in the home on the monitors for her to watch, not really knowing if she was aware of it or not. But, the soaps, they're every single day. They're people's stories. They're stories and people that they live with for decades, actually. And for maybe a half an hour, maybe an hour, they had their grandma back. She remembered her daughter and her granddaughter. And, you know, they were actually able to have a conversation and chat more than they had in years, you know, and it was fleeting, but it was there. It was a moment. And I think it's a very, you know, obvious example of how what we do can matter to people in such a strong way. And the fact that, you know, Bill Bell had Alzheimer's as well, and that something that he created was able to help someone else with that is gorgeous. So I think that's probably something I'll be proud of for a very, very long time.
You have every reason to be. That's quite a story. And this is the one that we use to wrap every break about.
Okay.
What is the best piece of advice anyone ever gave you?
Move your hands, don't hit the mic.
one of them. And our audio engineer.
you know, honestly, yeah, talk with your hands, don't hit the mic is the one I always say. But the one that I always remember, and it's so small, but Jeannie Cooper on Desperate Housewives told me never to wear shoes that I'm uncomfortable in. You know, because you're going to be in them for such a long time. And that's something that probably stuck with me just because she made a very big deal of it on set because I had outgrown my shoes because I was a kid who constantly had growth spurts. you know, yeah. And I think maybe that theater and performing doesn't just have to be a career. You know, if you're someone who really enjoys doing theater, but you don't see it as a viable option for you as a career, that doesn't mean you just have to stop. There's community theater, there's, you know, improv classes. There are ways to still perform, not as your main monetary, you know, income. And I think that's something that I think people think it's all or nothing. And it doesn't have to be. You know, if it makes you happy, do it. Yeah.
Great stuff, Darcy Rose. Honestly, I so enjoyed getting to chat with you tonight.
Thank you.
Know, thank you for all these great stories and bits of wisdom that you gave our audience. It's really going to serve them well.
Oh, goodness. Thank you. I appreciate that. I talk a lot, so it's good to know some of them are hitting a home run.
Yes, you got it.
Ah, yeah. Okay,
run,
yeah.
They call it a home run.
There we go. Yeah. Score. No, wrong one. Never mind. Touchdown. Ah, never mind.
Well, this was absolutely epic. And for all the folks at home who may want to connect with you on social media, where's the best place for them to find you?
Probably Instagram. I'm at Darcy Rose Burns on Instagram, B-Y-R-N-E-S for Burns, because why be easy when you can be difficult? That's that spelling right there. And same for Twitter. That's my Twitter as well. And I think my Facebook is derose.start or something like that, because that's a little motto I have for myself. That's good advice. Yeah, whatever you want to do, just start doing it. Don't worry about if you're going to be able to finish it. To reach for the stars, try with all of your heart. But before you can reach them, you just have to start. Wrote that poem when I was probably 13. So that's a start for you. Yeah, and then YouTube is, I think, just Darcy Rose Burns as well. So
that's good. For the most part, you keep it pretty simple with the name. So, all right, everyone, just go and follow
Darcy Rose Burns.
Yeah, on all of the social media platforms. Thank you so much again. This was a great time.
Thank you so much for having me, Al. It's been a pleasure.
And to all the folks at home who listened tonight, thank you so much for joining us. Be sure to subscribe to Break a Bat. Follow us wherever you get your podcasts. This is Al Malafronte signing off from the Broadway Podcast Network. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening to Break a Bat. This is produced by the fine folks at the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit and subscribe at bpn.fm/breakabat. You can find me online at break_a_bat_podcast. And you can also find the Broadway Podcast Network on Instagram at Broadway Podcast Network. It's been so great having you here with us today, and we'll see you next time.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just Ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.